This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Freedom Industries pleaded guilty to three federal pollution charges this week, and some of its former employees have recently done the same. Former Freedom President Gary Southern and ex-part owner and past president Dennis Farrell await trial for their own set of charges. Amidst it all, the company continues to roll through bankruptcy proceedings. But as Dave Mistich reports, Freedom's deadline to enter into a voluntary remediation agreement with the State Department of Environmental Protection looms as cleanup of the site continues.
Freedom hosted a public meeting last night in a small room in the Charleston Civic Center to provide updates on the remediation of the site of the spill. Last January, a coal-scrubbing chemical leaked from a 40,000-gallon storage tank next to the Elk River, contaminating the drinking water of 300,000 West Virginians. Freedom Chief Restructuring Officer Mark Welsh led an initial presentation outlining his court-appointed responsibilities.
My job was to kind of facilitate the process through bankruptcy. We were in Chapter 11 of reorganization. My job was primarily to fulfill the orders that were pending, kind of work it out, and also clean the place up as best as we could.
Welsh says at least $11 million has gone to remediate the site, with millions of gallons of water and about 600 tons of dirt removed to date. Scrap metal from last summer's tank demolition was shipped to Akron, and soil was trucked to northern Ohio. But as for the water, Welsh says about 2.2 million gallons of it was split between Ohio and North Carolina, while 300,000 gallons made its way to the Charleston Sanitary Board. The cleanup is all part of Freedom's involvement in the DEP's voluntary remediation program. Arcadis, an environmental contracting firm, is acting as the licensed remediation specialist on behalf of Freedom. Ira Buchanan is Arcadis's project manager.
We have made application to the program. It has been submitted to the DEP, and it has been accepted with comments. There's about four things that we need to respond to just to tighten up the application. The next step is the agreement, where Freedom and the DEP will sign the agreement, which lays out a schedule for assessment, remediation, and ultimately closure for the site, and that's currently under negotiation.
Freedom has a March 30th deadline to enter into a voluntary remediation agreement with the DEP. Patty Hickman is the interim director of DEP's Division of Land Restoration, the office that oversees the voluntary remediation program. At the meeting, she outlined the steps Freedom and Arcadis will go through, including work plans, remediation standards, and risk assessments. Hickman also explained the potential use for the site once the company has submitted a final report and has been given a certificate of completion for the remediation program.
And some of these sites may only ever want to have an intended use for commercial or industrial development. There are some sites that do go to residential use, but if you have an old chemical factory or glass factory, a lot of times it's in an area and has the infrastructure that's suitable for additional development for some other kind of industry today. It provides a mechanism for us to restrict the land use or to put engineer controls into place to protect people and prevent exposure to chemicals that may be present.
And for some, that's the big concern, whether exposure to MCHM still exists or could continue to exist once Freedom completes the voluntary remediation program. And if it does, whether or not it's harmful to residents of the area. While most who attended the meeting were members of the media, attorneys for Freedom and Arcadis, or DEP officials, a handful of concerned citizens showed up as well. One of them was Phil Price, a semi-retired Charleston resident who says he had a 40-year career working with chemical companies and has experience in environmental analysis and remediation. Price says his main problem is a lack of data to back up past and future action.
And the question is, how many tons of MCHM is the DEP willing to abandon on that site? And given that they have stated that they want zero risk to the water drinkers in Charleston and to our water supply, the question becomes how much MCHM abandoned on that site is going to be significant. And at this stage, without a lot of analytical data on the water runoff presently and what they're finding in the soil excavations, it's hard to make a judgment.
And Price is right. Although Arcadis and DEP will work together to determine toxicological risk levels of MCHM, that'll come much later, following reports from federal officials expected this summer. Freedom's successful completion of the program also depends on its ability to finance the remediation. With bankruptcy proceedings ongoing, Welch says the company currently has about $450,000 in available cash. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
A federal agency held a public meeting last night to gather information about a proposed interstate gas pipeline project. 32 people spoke during the meeting at Bridgeport High School, voicing opposition or support for Dominion's Atlantic Coast Pipeline. The meeting was part of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's environmental review process for the 550-mile project. Many of the 14 people who spoke against the pipeline were concerned that it would lead to more hydraulic fracturing activity in order to supply the line. Linda Ireland of Doddridge County asked the commission to weigh the effects of more drilling in her area.
So in considering the impacts of the pipeline, please also consider the impacts of the intense gas drilling and fracking that it will foster. We who live in the drilling areas know only too well that natural gas is not a clean energy alternative.
18 people spoke in favor of the pipeline's development. Most cited the project's potential positive economic impact on the state. Matt McComas with the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation shared some numbers with the commission.
In fact, a recent study found that in West Virginia, over the construction period, the project would support about 3,100 jobs, including 1,800 directly supported by spending on construction activities. These are jobs our hardworking men and women need, and jobs they can complete efficiently and safely.
If approved, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline would run from Harrison County through Lewis, Upshur, Randolph, and Pocahontas counties on its way to Virginia. It would end in Lumberton, North Carolina. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:51. Some freezing rain this morning in areas of the Potomac Highlands and the Eastern Panhandle. Warming up today, though. Daytime highs in the 60s and low 70s. Rain and thunderstorms statewide in the forecast today. A chance of rain tonight with lows in the 40s and 50s. Rain and thunderstorms continue Thursday and Thursday night. Daytime highs tomorrow in the 60s and low 70s. Lows in the 30s. For Friday, scattered morning snow showers becoming all rain and daytime highs only in the 30s and 40s by Friday.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the CAMC Foundation, supporting pediatric services for underserved and high-risk patients at CAMC Women's and Children's Hospital. More information at camcfoundation.org.
Even in our world of social media, news, websites, and yes, radio, people in many rural communities in West Virginia still get their local news by reading their weekly newspaper. In Monroe County, the local paper, the Monroe Watchman, has been published each week for over 140 years. For the Traveling 219 project, Gibbs Kinderman talked with the current editor, Craig Moeller, about the paper's origins in the unsettled years after the Civil War.
The Watchman started in 1872, and it was originally called the Border Watchman. It was started by a fellow by the name of Albert Fowler, and he only had it a few years, and then Charles Johnson came in from the Valley, Virginia, and purchased it, I believe it was in 1876.
Why did he call it the Border Watchman?
It was, of course, just after the Civil War, and I don't know for sure, but I assume that that probably had something to do with it, since we were on the Virginia border and the new state of West Virginia would have been created only 8 or 9 years before that. So I think that the war and the border between what had been the Union and the Confederacy probably had something to do with it.
Craig's dad, H.H. Moeller, started his career at the Watchman at an early age.
Actually, my dad started working here while he was in high school and then went away to prep school and actually attended a couple years at the Naval Academy, but there were some issues in the family and he didn't finish at the academy. So he came back here and He was just interested in the paper and always sort of loved it, and actually had, I think, told a few of his friends at the academy that he wanted to come back to Union and run the paper at some point in his life.
So you were born with printer's ink in your blood.
Yeah, I guess so. I hung around a lot here when I was younger. It was sort of fun to come in and watch what they were doing and work with the school paper in high school. And, of course, we printed it here. So would come in and help stuff inserts after school on the mailing day when I was in high school and junior high some. So, yeah, it's sort of been a part of me, I guess.
Neither daily newspapers nor TV stations cover Monroe County news, so residents depend on the paper to keep up with local happenings, and the paper depends on them to help decide what is newsworthy.
Yeah, we really try to, and a lot of the stuff is submitted for the paper. You know, we have a small staff. It's still a family-run business. We only have four full-time employees, two family members, my mother and I, and then two additional employees, and you know, it's hard to get out, actually, and we don't have an assigned reporter that can spend all their time out on the road trying to cover things. So big things we hear about, we try to go cover, but an awful lot of the stuff we get is sent in by readers who want the information in the paper. So, you know, I think that's certainly a part of the service that a community paper can provide.
This year, Craig's proud mother, Dale Moeller, celebrates her 50th anniversary as an owner of the paper. Mrs. Moeller, the Watchman's publisher and general manager, has become a part of Monroe County tradition herself. And Craig hopes the rising generation of Moellers will help carry on the family newspaper tradition.
I really don't know. I hope it can stay in the family. We haven't quite caught up with the Johnsons yet. They had three editors in a row, and so far we only have two. But with my kids, you know, if they're interested, you would love to have them here at some point. If they're not, you know, I have four nephews, and maybe some of them will be. And if that doesn't happen either, then I guess we'll just sort of have to see what the future holds.
That's Gibbs Kinderman of Allegheny Mountain Radio speaking with Craig Moeller, the editor of the Monroe Watchman, a weekly newspaper in Union, West Virginia. For more about the Traveling 219 project, visit traveling219.com. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.